Good morning. We are continuing our study of Joel's The Art of Spiritual Healing. And we are on Chapter 7, Practical Instructions to Workers. This is assuming that you want to practice healing by spiritual means, and that you want to be a practitioner. So he begins with, the first requisite for any person who practices spiritual healing, even if only for himself, is a developed spiritual consciousness. Because all healing is the result of individual consciousness, yours and mine. It's not dependent on some God. It's not dependent on God consciousness or Christ consciousness in the abstract. It is dependent upon individual consciousness lifted to the heights of Christ consciousness. If, however, the practitioner does not keep his consciousness filled with truth and love, those who touch him on life's highway will not find him doing the works of God, spreading harmony and peace abroad in the world. Jesus, the greatest spiritual healer ever known, lived, moved, and had his being continuously in the realization or discernment of the Father within. And for that reason, he could do the works of God and state with conviction, "He that seeth me, seeth him that sent me." So Jesus walked around with a continuous discerning of the Father within. He felt it everywhere he went, which is why the woman pressed through the throng, touched the edge of his consciousness, and was healed. Jesus Christ, insofar as our knowledge goes, had the greatest degree of unfolded and realized God consciousness, discerned God consciousness. Always the healer is the consciousness of any individual who has attained some measure of Christ consciousness. And the measure attained determines the degree of the healing work. A practitioner is a degree of spiritual consciousness, developed spiritual consciousness of truth. And in the degree that he is imbued with truth, will his consciousness have power? Now, I paused here and I looked up that word, imbued. There's two things to consider. Truth. I and my Father are one is not truth. That is not truth. That's a statement about truth. But when you take it within and contemplate it until you come into the actual discernment of your oneness with the Father, when you discern your oneness, that is truth. And the word imbued means, according to the dictionary, permeated, saturated, inspired. So you are permeated with truth. You are permeated, saturated, inspired with the discernment of oneness. That's quite a bit different from just a statement, isn't it? So let's see it again here. A practitioner is a degree of developed consciousness of truth. And in the degree that he is saturated with oneness, will his consciousness have power? If you've been praying and you haven't seen any power, you understand now why. It is because perhaps you've only had statements in your mind and you haven't been permeated with the discerning of oneness with the Father. But when you are, your consciousness will have power. By the grace of God, God's consciousness is realized as individual consciousness, and so you discern God's consciousness as your individual consciousness. No spiritual progress can be made without the grace of God. And of yourself, you cannot succeed regardless of how determined you might be, regardless of how much zeal or how much faith you might have. You must realize that you did not bring yourself to this study, but that something impelled you. And that something that impelled you is within you. Always the impulse comes from within. A great responsibility rests upon those who go into the spiritual healing ministry, and of them is demanded the highest understanding. No one should go into this spiritual ministry unless God takes him by the nape of the neck and pushes him into it. The practitioner or teacher becomes a transparency for God activity. It is his function to maintain such an awareness of truth, such a discerning of truth, that when a student or patient comes to the consciousness of that practitioner, he will find nothing there but truth and love. So you must be permeated, saturated with truth and love, and you must discern it, well, all day, all night, if you want to go into the work. In proportion as a practitioner keeps himself filled with truth and love, inharmony and discord are eliminated from the experience of those who turn to him for help. Now, that does not mean that you're walking around repeating statements of truth and feeling kind toward your fellow man. It means you are discerning oneness with the Father. And when someone asks you for help, you discern that oneness right where they are. The secret is discernment. Remember from last week? Since God is my consciousness, and God, or truth, fills my consciousness, and is the substance and activity of it, that truth is the substance of the form of everything within my universe, even if it appears as a tree, or a flower, an enemy, or a friend. Everything in my universe responds to that awareness. What awareness? My consciousness and God are one. We have been taught in the infinite way to contemplate truth, or statements of truth, or scriptures. And to contemplate them until we know everything we can about that statement. And finally we come to a rest. The mind stops, and for a moment, we are receptivity itself. We feel something within. Maybe we hear the still small voice. Maybe we feel the movement of spirit. Maybe we are permeated with oneness, with discerning oneness. And we are taught to do that many, many, many times. He suggests to students who are advancing that they begin to have 2-minute meditations, maybe 30 times a day, 12 times to 30 times a day. And that exercise is to open your inner spiritual ear. That's the ear that allows you to discern truth. And so by practicing opening that ear over time, over, oh, say a year of practice, you develop the ability, wherever you find yourself, to get still and discern the truth of being. Your being, my being, anybody that comes to you being. I embrace my universe within my consciousness, a universe formed of and by that consciousness. And so if you are doing that, your discernment begins forming itself as your universe. I stand at the doorway of my consciousness, permitting nothing of a discordant nature to enter, maintaining it in its purity as that place through which God flows to all the world. And so we have that word again. Consciousness imbued with truth, permeated with truth, impregnated with truth, saturated with truth, inspired by truth, rooted and grounded in truth, will do the healing works, whether that consciousness is yours or mine. Your discerning truth and resting in it to see what it is going to do, to bear witness to the truth. This is how you become an instrument, a transparency for Christ. Everything in your world takes on the complexion of your consciousness. You become a law unto your universe in proportion as the Christ consciousness takes over your life. Now, this, one of the simplest ways to understand that is when you sit down to meditate and you feel you've made a contact, and then you get up and you go to Walmart or some other store, and when you get there, there's a parking place right in front. And when you go in, the item you were seeking is right there. And when you go up front, someone says, "Why don't you go ahead of me?" You are experiencing synchronicity. You are experiencing your consciousness, your discerning truth, forming itself as the harmony of your day. But we have to go further than this. We who would be in this spiritual ministry, we have to find a way to practice these 30 meditations a day so that we're in a constant, continuous state of discerning oneness. And therefore, when anyone calls or writes and ask for help, they touch that discernment. And it is the discernment, or Christ consciousness, which does the work. Whenever anyone asks for help, at least for a year, or two, or three, you should be willing to give the very best treatment you know how to give. But after a year or two or three of giving hundreds and hundreds, perhaps even thousands of treatments, the truth becomes so embedded and embodied in your consciousness, and you are living in such a high state of consciousness that when somebody asks for help, you are able simply to respond with, "I am with you." And that will be a sufficient treatment. But that will only be possible after you have given hundreds of treatments and have established yourself in the full realization or discerning of the truth. You see, this is all about lifting consciousness out of a mortal material sense of existence into a spiritual discerning of existence. It's wonderful, isn't it? He says, there are people who do not receive healings from medicine, and yet when those same people find a mental science practitioner, they respond very quickly. Now, what is mental science? Mental science is affirmations and denials. You and the Father are one. God is the health of thy continents. And you repeat that over and over for the person that has called. I think some of them use names. You are well, Jane Smith, and God is your consciousness, Jane, and God is the health of thy countenance, Jane, and Jane and the Father are one. So that would be a mental science practitioner. And some people don't respond to medicine, but when they call a mental science practitioner, they have a healing. Now, almost 60 years ago, I had a problem one time and I called Unity. I called their prayer line. And a lovely person answered. And she said, "You know you're God's child. You know you're filled with peace. You know you're experiencing God's harmony," and so on and so forth. And it was a mental science. Now, I don't know what else she was doing. She might have been quietly knowing or discerning truth at the same time. But I responded. Almost immediately, I felt better. On the other hand, he says, there are many people who do not respond to mental treatment and find help only from a practitioner who works on the spiritual plane. Each individual must go within himself, and if he is sincere, he will be led to the practitioner who can meet his need. Now, there's nothing wrong with reaching out to a mental science practitioner. Now, there's nothing wrong with reaching out to a mental science practitioner if that's how you feel led. And if you feel led that way, you'll probably receive a healing. And there's nothing wrong with it. One is not better than another. So, do what you feel led to do. Now, what is the difference, mental science practitioner and a spiritual healing? Well, mental science practitioner uses affirmations and denials. A spiritual healer may start out with affirmations in their mind, but rapidly they come to a place of listening. They come up higher than or deeper than the affirmation, and they listen for the still small voice. And when they hear it or when they feel it, it's on a different level than thinking. All I know to describe it is it's discerning. It's feeling, not thinking. It's feeling the truth of being. And when the truth of being is felt, people receive a healing. Sometimes the practitioner, even on the spiritual plane, will fail to meet certain cases. And while that may have to do with the fact that he may not at the moment be on a high enough level spiritually, it may also be that the patient is not yet ready to yield, to give up his material sense of existence, or whatever is the nature of that state of consciousness that is binding him to the claim. Now, I really didn't know that when you call on somebody for help and they say, "I will work for you," that you are supposed to yield and give up your material sense of existence. I didn't know it until I read it. There is more to healing than merely the realization of physical well-being in the body, or the restoration of physical well-being. Sometimes it is much more important that the individual be spiritually awakened than that he have merely a physical healing. In that event, the practitioner may not be able to help him until that awakening occurs. But after that, the healing often follows quickly. It is the practitioner's responsibility to continue until the individual awakens. But it is not the practitioner who awakens him. The Christ, through the practitioner's recognition of truth, awakens him. A spiritual healer must be as clean-cut in his realization or discerning of truth as a musician or mathematician is in his understanding of music or mathematics. One little bit of fuzziness in mathematics results in the wrong answer. One little bit of fuzziness in music and the wrong note is struck. So also it is vitally important to have a sharp and clear understanding of what the principles of spiritual healing are in order to make treatment effective. Now, where can you find those principles of spiritual healing? You can find them in chapter 5 in this book, What Did Hinder You? It is the most concise and perfect, clear explanation of healing principles. And all of them are in that chapter. In some places, in one or two paragraphs, they're all there. So, that's where they are. It's vitally important to have a sharp and clear understanding of what the principles of spiritual healing are. And you'll find them there. Your consciousness of truth will be a law of harmony to your universe. Now, he says that a lot, especially in this chapter. Your discerning truth, as that permeates your consciousness, it becomes a law unto your universe and anyone in your universe that turns to you. The demonstration of harmony is not something for which you can sit idly by and wait. No, you can't say, well, God will take care of it, and just wait. You must do something specific about it. And that something is to maintain the truth of being as the activity of your consciousness. And so your discerning the truth of being must be the activity going on in your consciousness. That does not mean thinking about truth. It means the actual discerning of your true being, of my true being, of all true being. A practitioner must come out and be separate. The entire world must be given up so that he can live and move and have his being morning, noon, and night in the divine consciousness or in the divine discernment, the divine awareness. Practitioners who are deeply involved in the duties of community or family life can seldom be successful because the needs of their patients and students must take precedence over all other obligations. there is no room in a spiritual ministry for time-consuming social activities. There is no room for many friends, nor for active participation in community or political life. When a person enters the healing ministry, he must in large measure separate himself from his human contacts in order to hold himself in such a state of spiritual awareness that he is always ready for any and every call made upon him. This life is the life of the soul, and it necessitates a death to the things of the world. And he's deadly serious about that. But be not afraid. If you get into this work, your friends will drop away. You won't have to tell them, stay away. They'll drop away. Just as the practitioner must not permit his personal relationships, family or social, to encroach upon his time in such a way as to pull him down from a high level of consciousness, so he must also guard against similar encroachments on the part of his patients or student body. As long as I have been in this work, says Joel, I have made it a rule that telephone calls be limited to about 3 minutes. The reason for that time limitation is so that others who call will find the line open, and that my consciousness will not be cluttered up with non-essentials. Which is why you don't have to tell a spiritual practitioner what the disease is, or who you are, or what the doctor said. And he is going to get into that. A practitioner must at all times stand in readiness to accept calls, whether day or night. There are no office hours in spiritual healing except 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The wisest course is for the practitioner to sit at home, live his life in God, in discerning God, always remaining steadfast in spiritual consciousness, and never permitting the fears of the world to upset him. If the practitioner permits himself to accept appearances at face value, then he will be the blind leading the blind, and they will both fall into the ditch. Practitioners must hold themselves aloof from the world. This is not ignoring error. It is relegating error to its rightful place as nothingness, nothing to be feared, nothing to be hated, nothing to be loved, nothing. Spiritual healing is accomplished only by an actual God realization or God discerning, by an actual experience of you discerning God, feeling God, knowing God aright. It has to do with knowing the true identity of those who are appearing to you as your patients. As a practitioner, you have no right to be interested in the name of the patient, the name of the disease, or its diagnosis. Although no practitioner worthy of the name would ever fail to express kindness, love, and compassion to all those who come to him with their problems, he listens understandingly, but he does not hear, because he knows that the all-knowing infinite wisdom, which is the reality of being, knows everything, and it does not have to be told the name of the person or the name of the disease. It is an infinite intelligence which knows the need before you knew it and before your patient does. If a person tells you, "I have a headache," there's nothing you humanly can do about it. Or if he says, "I have a footache," you can do no more about that. The same is true if he informs you he has a broken bone, or tuberculosis, or cancer. What can you do about any of these things humanly? What good is that information to you? What is accomplished by all this listening to rumors? And why permit yourself to accept all these temptations to believe in a self or a law apart from God? The practitioner is far better able to remain in his consciousness of God if he pays no attention to the person, condition, or thing. If you have any expectation of being a part of a spiritual healing ministry, learn first of all never to condemn those whom you would help. Stop condemning, stop criticizing, stop judging. Judge not after appearances. Lift yourself out of the mesmerism which indulges in condemnation and judging. Your function as a practitioner is never to hold an individual in bondage to any of his sins of omission or commission, even if he continues to commit them 70 times 7, still you must release him 70 times 7. Now, when you take a patient that has called you for help or written you for help, and you turn into your meditation, you should forget the patient, the diagnosis, and the disease, and there remain steadfast in your stillness until you feel that discernment taking over. When that happens, you are released and you feel it. It's an inner, "Thank you, Father." And at the same time, your patient is released. And this is telling you, if he sins 70 times 7, still you must release him 70 times 7. There must be understanding on the part of the practitioner. There must be compassion. There must be love. And that means understanding and compassion whether the patient is sinning or sick. In the degree that you can live and behold those about you without condemnation, always maintaining the attitude of "neither do I condemn thee," do you lift yourself and others from the burden of their errors and that sets you and them free to receive God's grace, and that's how you release them. In this way, the condemnation of mortality is lifted from yourself and others, and man is revealed as the very image and likeness of God. It's all about discerning the truth of being and feeling it within your consciousness until you experience that release and your patient is released too. That's what spiritual healing is. One of the great functions of the Christ is to redeem, to restore, and to regenerate that which is lost, whether it is the lost crops, the lost ears of the locusts, the lost health, or the lost morals. You must look into your patient's or student's heart and mind and there find God enthroned. Until you can see that the person standing before you is God made manifest, you will be looking for God to do something for somebody. Every time you are led to believe that your patient needs help, your spiritual vision is blurred. Every time you direct your treatment to somebody out here, it is your vision, your spiritual vision, that is blurred. Because it is you who are seeing the other person incorrectly. This is hard to do at times. Somebody calls you and says, "My husband got drunk and he beat me. I have a chipped tooth and a black eye and my ribs are sore where he punched me. Will you please help me?" You say, "Of course, I'll help you. I'll start right now." You close your eyes. You try to forget the person and the situation, but you can't do it. This is wrong, and you know it's wrong. You want to get involved humanly. You want to tell the person, "Leave. Leave him. Go find safety." You want to condemn him in your mind. This man may be an alcoholic, but that doesn't excuse his behavior. So see, your mind is wrestling with these things, and you're trying to get quiet and discern God. It becomes difficult. Somebody you know and love calls you or writes you and says, "They just discovered I have breast cancer, and it's progressed to the point where they want to do a double mastectomy. Will you please help me?" You sit down to meditate, and if you've been close to somebody that's had that surgery, you know how difficult that is. So you have a hard time discerning God. Well, as best you can, forget the person that asked for help. As best you can, just for the next few minutes, don't think about the situation. As best you can, grab a hold of a scripture or a statement of truth. Father, speak. Thy servant heareth. I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee. And so you take that truth and you mull it over. You may repeat it a few times. Slowly, ever so slowly, you begin to calm down. Yes, I know what the pictures are, but I also know that God is here. Yes, I know what the experiences are like, but God is here. Father, reveal thyself. I stand still. I listen. I personally can't do anything, but I can listen. I know how to listen. Father, speak. I feel something briefly, very briefly, but it was something. It was spirit, and I felt its movement. Kind of in the background, but I felt it. Yes, God is here. Now, let me be still and rest in God. And by that time, you will feel the presence of God. You will feel omnipresence. Maybe just a touch on the side of the face, but you feel it. So yes, sometimes this is difficult to go from human mortal consciousness into spiritual awareness. But if you've been practicing these 2-minute meditations 12 to 30 times a day for 1 or 2 or 3 years, you are able to do this. Some of your patients will give you a hard battle before they yield. But do not be ensnared by any such resistance and be led to conclude that they are a little too evil, too wicked, too materialistic, or too unloving. Do not be trapped into judging by appearances. You prove your readiness for God's ministry by being able to look any and every appearance in the face without judgment, even if you have to continue looking at it for years. Keep right on realizing, thou art the Christ of God. Thou art pure spiritual being. Christ sits enthroned in thy being. Thy mind is an instrument for God. Thy body is the very temple of God. God is the soul of thy being. Do not forget to take into consideration all three parts of your patient's being, the spirit or soul, the mind, and the body. God is individual being, I wrote in the margin. Spirit flows into your consciousness, and through mind it forms itself as body. So, consciousness, spirit, mind, body. God manifests as man. Understand God to be the soul, the spirit, and the life of all being. Realize that the mind of every individual is an instrument through which God functions, and the body is the temple of the living God. Then you are beholding a whole man, spirit, mind, and body, all one, all parts of the whole, and that whole is God. The practitioner is an instrument through which the voice of God utters itself, and his word is quick and sharp and powerful. The practitioner must never be so puffed up with self-importance as to assume the duties or functions of God and think that he knows what is right for his patient. It is not the prerogative of the practitioner to enter the human scene with his human judgment and attempt to decide how a problem should be resolved. It is not the practitioner's wisdom that heals the patient. It is his power, the power of God. Therefore, the function of the spiritual healer is to pray. He must become receptive and responsive. He must become a transparency. And then he comes whose right it is, quick and sharp and powerful, changing the body in the twinkling of an eye. If the metaphysical teaching of the last century has proved anything at all, it is that any person who seriously wants to be a healer can become one. Not easily always. To some, that consciousness comes very quickly. To others, slowly. But it is obtainable by anybody who is determined enough to have it. It has nothing to do with any mysterious outside God. It has nothing to do with any mysterious outside powers. It has to do with the degree of developed spiritual consciousness of the individual. Developed spiritual discernment of the individual. So, he begins with a developed spiritual consciousness in this chapter, and he ends with a developed spiritual consciousness of the individual. Now, how do you develop consciousness? Through the practice of meditation, these 2-minute meditations, and sometimes a 30-minute meditation. This allows you to develop your consciousness where when you turn within, you can sense spiritual consciousness, spiritual presence. You can sense God itself. You can sense omnipresence. You can feel its movement. And then, through the practice of people asking you for help, and you remembering the spiritual principles that you find in chapter 5, and you practice becoming still, listening, waiting, knowing the truth. And through the practice of spiritual healing principles, you develop a consciousness that can do this. It really can. So, therefore, I have suggested that we all have a period before bedtime. Wherever you are in the world, doesn't matter. And during that period, we become still. We become receptive. We listen and intuitively feel Christ and know that we are releasing it into the world whenever we feel that release. I feel the presence. Thank you, Father. Christ is released. And thy will be done. Not my will, not my understanding, but thy understanding, thy will. This is the way. And then several times a day, have a 2-minute meditation. Father, I am here. You are here. I listen. Okay. We develop our consciousness into a consciousness of discernment to the point where we are constantly, continuously discerning the truth of being. And then anyone that asks for help will receive it. Not from us, from the Christ of their own being. When you touch the Christ of your being, you touch the Christ of all being. And it is felt by anyone who has asked for help. This is how you prove oneness. Well, thank you everyone for drawing this message out this week. It seemed to me to be somewhat of a dry chapter, but we got through it, and I think we found some meat in there. So thank you. God bless. Take care. Find your silence, and behold, I make all things new. Thank you.